Biden used State of the Union to galvanize base. DOD to set up port in Gaza, but no troops will be on the ground. Haiti falls into collapse. TikTok to be banned. And SpaceX successfully tests fully stacked Starship. All that and more on today's episode of Contemporary Insanity. The views expressed in this episode do not represent the opinions or values of Kentucky Wesleyan College. Please don't sue us.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Braden Jennings.
And I'm John Payment.
And welcome back to this week's episode of Contemporary Insanity, a show that highlights and discusses the realm of American politics and interviews guests on the origins of their own political beliefs.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Contemporary Insanity. I'm here on the phone with Braden Jennings.
Hello, John. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Hope everyone in the audience is having a good day, too. All right. First order of business is last Thursday, Biden gave his State of the Union address, and it was a disaster. The complete count of slurs was 127. That's more than one slur a minute. That's insane.
That is insane. Did you see how many people viewed his address?
No, was it high or low?
32 million people. 32 million people watched him give that address.
Well, hopefully it makes them change their vote.
I think more people were watching Mike Johnson in the background, though.
Oh, yeah. His faces were awesome. Did you see the meme where it's like, Mike Johnson is all of us tonight?
Yeah, I did, yeah. And he was just shaking, just... Yeah. In a look of despair.
He had Tucker-level facial expressions.
That's bold to be, like, because you know your face is on the camera. He did it intentionally,
oh, yeah, 100%. I'm sure. I mean, it's better than ripping up the speech afterward, which is what Nancy Pelosi did.
Did you see the videos of, like, the guys with the cameras who were following Biden post-speech and... They were kind of like tailing behind him. And I don't know if these individuals who he was speaking to and shaking his hand were lobbyists. Some of them were legislators. But I know one guy, I don't know who he is, but he was like, you really showed them cognitive decline, didn't you? Making a joke in reference to like, oh, he's not obviously having cognitive decline. He actually did very well. But there was a bunch of these guys. It was very weird. There was just a bunch of guys around him. I don't know if they're affiliates with the Democratic Party, but they were like, so much for cognitive decline. Like, that was such an amazing speech. And it's like, you're lying to this sweet old man. It's like,
well,
it's
like when you go, left-wing Twitter like, was all about, hey, Republicans can't use the cognitive decline argument anymore. Biden was perfectly... eloquent throughout the entire speech. He didn't say anything wrong. He was perfect.
Leftists are happy as long as he doesn't go up there and have a stroke mid-speech.
I mean, yeah, Biden set the bar so low at this point. As long as he survives the speech, it's a success.
I mean, they almost treat him like a toddler when he comes off stage who just performed in their first recital at school.
Oh, yeah, and normal campaign events, his wife comes and grabs his hand every time he finishes talking to make sure he doesn't Roomba off the stage.
Do you think it's a conspiracy theory to say that Biden is probably not running our executive branch?
I think the fact that the executive branch is in the state it is perfect evidence that Biden is the one in charge. Like, just look at the Afghanistan withdrawal. No one in their right mind would have given up Bagram Air Base first, but that's the decision they made.
Well, that wasn't the intent either. It was his decision, his executive decision, but the intent was to not only pull the troops first, they were supposed to take all of that equipment as well, but I don't know exactly who made that call. I don't know if it was Biden, but their priority was getting civilians who worked for the government and American civilians out first. But the problem is they never went back and got the equipment because the Taliban had already taken over most of the city at that point.
they pulled the military out before they even tried to pull the civilians out. Like, the embassy in Kabul was operating after we had pulled our troops out. And the Afghan army couldn't hold back against the Taliban. We got rid of the air support. So we just let the Taliban take the country, which was kind of the plan under Trump before, like, the year before. Trump did have a meetings with the Taliban, talking like peace deals. He said we'd be out of the country as long as they didn't kill an American soldier. The Taliban kept to that. We were going to pull out of the country. But according to Trump, his plan was to collapse onto Bagram Air Base, continue to give air support to the Afghan National Army, and when our military pulled out, we'd pull our civilians out too. But we didn't do that. Biden got in charge and said, I don't like Trump's plan. I'm going to do my own plan. Let's do it this way.
Well, yeah, what was interesting is that we pulled all of our civilian allies and our troops back to Bagram Air Base, and then we evacuated most of the civilians, not all of them. But we put as, like, many bodies on C-130s as we could.
Well, that was at Kabul Airport, not at Bagram. So Bagram Air Base is out a little bit further, and it is actually a military base. Kabul Airport is just an airport. It has far less security. Like you saw in the early videos, there was people crowding the tarmacs. And we had to send in, I forgot what, Marine unit and the 82nd Airborne to clear it out and try to get people out.
Oh, then I must be getting the two confused. But no, I am right, because the original plan, they still took civilians and troops to Bagram Air Base. They didn't shut it down immediately.
Bagram Air Base was closed when all the disasters at Kabul happened. Like, the people loading onto planes and stuff was at Kabul. Like, where the terrorist attack was, where the bombing was that killed 13 Americans, was Kabul Airport.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I might have to Google this. Anyways, we can move on to something else. This doesn't have anything to do with Biden's State of the Union speech.
It does, because there was a man arrested at the State of the Union, the father of one of the people killed in the bombings. He yelled out in the middle, what about Abbey Gate? What about the Marines? Biden ignored him pretty much, and Biden hasn't really said anything about the Afghanistan withdrawal since. The dude was arrested, even though people in Congress can yell whatever they want for no reason. That was one of his many disasters during the State of the Union. Another one of his big gaffes during the State of the Union was Laken Riley, which, as we talked about last time on the podcast, Laken Riley was a nursing student in Georgia. She was killed by an illegal immigrant that came here while Biden was president. The illegal immigrant was arrested once in New York for child abuse. He was let go. He then moved down to Georgia, committed this rape and murder. So first off, he shouldn't have been in the country. Second, he should have been in jail. And then Biden messes up Laken Riley's name, calling her Lincoln Riley. And afterwards, Biden apologized for calling him an illegal.
Okay, so I figured it out. So before we move on to God bless your soul, Laken Riley's death and Biden's mishap, Bagram Air Force Base, at the fall, at the height of the troops being pulled out, they ended up turning it over to the Afghani Ministry of Defense, which ended up being taken over by the Taliban. But I was right. They did evacuate some citizens and soldiers from the base at the initial fall of Kabul. So that's what I was referring to back then. Does that make sense?
Kind of. I wasn't saying that they never evacuated troops from Bagram. Initially, they did. They left Bagram with the ANA, the Afghan National Army.
But they left, like, everything there.
Yeah, they left it. allegedly for the Afghan National Army to use. We donated a bunch of stuff to the Afghan National Army. That fell. Bagram Air Base fell before the city of Kabul fell entirely. And then the city of Kabul fell, and that's when we sent troops back in to Kabul Air Base or Kabul Airport to help evacuate civilians, both of American citizens and Afghans that helped us, that had green cards because they helped us. Even that, we left a ton of, like, thousands of them behind. And that's when the bombing at Abbey Gate happened that killed 13 Americans.
Yeah, I remember all that. I thought you were saying that, like, Bagram Air Base was never open at this, at the fall of Kabul. That's what I was kind of, that's what I was a little confused. But yeah, I remember that in 2021, it was a crazy scene. People hanging off C-130s, falling to their deaths, trying to escape an Islamic radical nation. Honestly, you know, it's sad, not only for the people who have to live there, but just, you know, people that I know that served and did tours in Afghanistan, you know, it's just, it seemed like a shot at them almost, you know. But, yeah, going back to Lakin Riley, yeah, she was a nursing student at the University of Georgia, and she was on a run early in the morning, and she was grabbed, kidnapped, and killed by a illegal immigrant. Biden's administration has not made one post about it. Just for reference, he made, I think, 29 to 30 posts about George Floyd after he was killed, and hasn't posted one thing, or just hasn't posted one thing about the death of Lakin Riley. And I think it would hurt his base, and I think that's why he's not posting it. For whatever reason, an innocent young girl could be killed, and there would be some far left leaning Democrat who would say, well, we shouldn't focus on the fact that he's an immigrant. It's just a sad situation. And it's like, well, yeah, but it's, you know, it's avoidable.
Yeah, that it was completely preventable either by not letting him in the country in the first place or by keeping him in prison the first time he was arrested.
And then going back to the State of the Union, Biden blamed the Republican Party for their noncompliance in trying to secure border policy, which I would argue it's both sides. I think our government as a whole has failed. But I don't know. What do you think?
Well, the bill they presented, we've talked about this on the podcast before too, but the bill they presented wasn't really a border security bill. It was making everything they're already doing legal. It was allowing 8,500 people in a day, not counting minors, and a lot of the young men that come to the border, they drop their IDs and they say they're 17 because you get extra protections if you come here as a minor. And it would have allowed work permits for people already in the country, and it would have taken the judicial route of gaining your citizenship and turned it into a bureaucratic route, basically giving the Biden administration the ability to give whoever they wanted legal status.
One of his key points when talking about the borders, he said that his administration was going to hire, was it 1,000? Was it 10,000 immigration lawyers and judges to try and speed up the process of people getting their identifications and citizenship, which
That's not what we need right now, though. Like, right now we need to stop the bleeding.
Yeah, it just baffles me because I know that there are bureaucratic hurdles that have to be jumped through, unfortunately. But, and maybe you can explain this better than I can. What's preventing them? Because Trump did it during COVID when he was president. what's stopping them? And I have my conspiracies, but what is stopping them possibly legally from just closing the border altogether and inciting stringent measures to prevent literally a single soul from crossing the border again? Because obviously we know, like, there's that place in California where there's just a hole in the wall.
Well, the entire border is just open pretty much. Even places where there's a wall right now, because CBP agents are held up with administrative duties, they aren't patrolled. So people come in and then just cut down where the wall is built and walk through.
Yes, but, you know, we could send the National Guard.
We could send, well, Biden can't send the National Guard. States can send their National Guards. Biden can send the military down there if he wanted to. Biden could close the border entirely if he wanted to, but he won't.
Well, that's what I was saying. I was saying states could send their National Guard, but then, so Texas put up their National Guard, put up that barbed wire, and then those federal agents were trying to take him down.
Yeah, the federal agents are complicit in this at this point.
I mean, it's like you said, use the analogy of a gunshot wound. Like, when someone gets shot, you
don't immediately start sewing shit up. You stop the bleeding first, figure out what's going on, and then fix the problem.
When someone gets shot, you don't make them fill out a 20-question survey about how and why they got shot and what they want, what they would like to do to treat it. But it's a democratic problem, really. I mean, I've never been for, like, completely open borders. I am obviously for people immigrating to the United States legally. But the fact that it's gotten so out of hand and our government's not really doing anything about it but putting Band-Aids on a gunshot wound is, I mean, it's quite disturbing, honestly. And I think that there's conspiratorial reasons why it keeps happening, really.
Well, it shouldn't be a democratic problem because democracy has nothing to do with border security, or shouldn't. We have an executive branch to do the authoritarian things. That's the reason we have it.
Well, you know, it is a democratic problem, and I'm obviously pro-democracy, but what I'm saying is that we have a split House and a split Senate. So you have one chamber who's trying to come up with a certain solution, and then you have another chamber who has a different majority party in place, and they have a different solution. So we have a president who isn't capable of probably tying his own shoes trying to resolve this issue. So this is blatant incompetency from our entire federal government. And the fact that our states have very little power to do anything except express, like, support through resolutions, like in the state legislature. I mean, California's not going to do anything. If it were up to them, they'd have all of Mexico reside in these, and without homes, because they love homeless people. So it's frustrating to me, and I think it makes our government look weak, and I think it makes our country weak, and just in general.
Yeah, and that's why something like this isn't something for Congress to fix. This isn't a Congress problem. This is an executive branch problem. The executive branch, right now it's run by an idiot, but it needs to say the border's closed, send troops down there, close the border entirely, then figure out what's going on, start deporting people, and then after that, you can start letting people in the legal way. You could start processing asylum claims the legal way instead of someone coming in and saying the magic words, I claim asylum, and now they have to be treated like their country's worse than it is. Because there's rules to claiming asylum. You can't do it for economic reasons, which is why most of the migrants come here.
They come here for economic opportunity, and then there's an abundance of Chinese immigrants who are coming over that half of them are probably spies from the CCP, but that's another issue.
Yeah, Chinese, Iranians, Afghanis, Syrians are all coming in through this border.
And it's not conspiratorial. You can look this up, people. I mean, we have college students in the United States who are spies for the CCP, and it's just a fact.
What are the schools called? They're called what's that Chinese religion?
Buddhism? No. China's not a religious country.
No, it's got some weird religious type deal. It's not really a religion. But they have, hold up, I'm going to Google this.
Anyways, you know what really gets me? What really bothers me from a policy and kind of just a moral standpoint, we have people in this country who suffer from addiction. They lack housing. They suffer with mental illness, many of whom are veterans who have served our country. And yet, and this is kind of a shot at, well, I don't know, Republicans and Democrats, they both want to solve the homeless issue. But why are we so caught up in making sure, and this is partially how some Democrats think, because they've made this argument, why are we so worried about the quality of life for some of these immigrants? And we're focusing on, well, they're having to live in tents and they lack water, food, and shelter. And it's like, well, we care about homeless people who are suffering with the same problem in our streets. If anything, they're worse off because they're suffering with mental health disorders. So we kind of just push them to the side. And there's so many issues domestically that we're facing that we're letting this be a problem when it doesn't have to be.
Well, we're letting it be a problem because people are afraid to take authoritarian measures. Like, people with mental health issues on the streets should be put into mental health hospitals involuntarily. They should be taken off the streets, put in a hospital. When people go to prison, they need to stay in prison. We can't let people out randomly. And there's things you can do to slow that, like don't imprison people for weed charges or random other nonviolent offenses. But violent criminals should not be on the street, and people with mental health problems should not be participating in society, like severe mental health problems.
I mean, our nation would be cleaner if we didn't. I mean, see, I'm pro liberty. I'm pro self preservation. Self-governance. I'm pro all these things, which are all inherently democratic. The problem is there's a balance between, well, if we're self-governing, but we're self-governed by crazy people. And here's an epiphany I had, John. We have become comfortable with the fact that consumerism and an increase in capitalistic gain supersedes truth. We see that with the media. We see that with politics. This is a fact. Media and corporations, if they can make an extra dollar, they will alter the truth. And this isn't, you know, politically one-sided. It goes for both. But does that, in a world where we're, you know,
I don't think it's money that makes them do that. It's control. Money is exactly okay.
I see those hand in hand with power.
You don't make money off of letting a bunch of criminals be on the street. You don't make money off of turning a bunch of kids gay. You get control by doing that.
No, you okay. With power comes money, and with money comes power. If you can convince the masses, or not even convince them, if you can show them that there is a child in North Dakota that is 6 years old and they're getting a sexual reassignment surgery, most people would agree, not everybody, that that's crazy. What if that story was fake? What if it was what if they completely made up the gender reassignment thing and it was just a kid who suffered with some mental illness and maybe his dad like sexually abused him or something. But that story got millions of views, and then it fuels the flame of this political war that's going on between leftists and conservatives. That is a fact. And well,
stories aren't fake, though. There's kids that are getting gender reassignment like things done. They're getting puberty blockers, which can damage them in the future. It makes them sterile. Makes them infertile.
Okay.
So these things are happening in the country. It's not someone making something up to get a click.
But this is not a prevalent issue that it needs to be the front page of a newspaper, okay? This isn't happening door to door in every neighborhood in the United States.
Every school in this country has at least like 10 trans kids. That wasn't a thing 10 years ago.
Okay, it wasn't a thing 10 years. Is that, you think that's true? That is not true. Go to Eastern Kentucky and go to a high school in Eastern Kentucky. I guarantee that there is maybe one of four high schools, if that. I guarantee that there's not as many as you think.
Okay, in Owensboro, in your high school, did you have trans kids?
There was maybe I went to school with probably like 1,000, 1,200 kids. There were maybe like three, and I was in there from the years of 2018 to 2022. So the issue that I'm trying to get at is on both sides, in media and politics, we overblow stories to get views in order for these media companies to make a larger profit. At the end of the day, that's all it is. It's about power and profit. That's one of the issues with capitalism. It's one of the issues with democracy. Do I still believe in democracy? Yes. But I am disappointed with American politics in its current state. I'm disappointed with the way our governance is, the approach to our governance. I'm ashamed. Everything's negative. Like back in the 50s and 60s or even 70s, I mean, there were times where people had disagreements, look at how we handled the war in the Middle East. We've seemed to have lost respect for what these positions are, and especially the presidency.
The thing that changed in America from the 50s to now was not capitalism. It was not consumerism. The thing that changed was Marxism coming into America. Neo-Marxism, like with critical theory, so critical race theory, critical gender theory, these things are the new things. These things are the things dividing us now. It's not capitalism. It's not.
Because social media exposes these issues and blows them up because they're radical in order to get views. You would not hear about these things if social media did not. You would not hear of these things on Fox News and CNN if it wasn't. Stupid people fall victim to these crazy stories. They blow them up. They instantiate them. And that is the reason that it happens.
Okay, media makes these things prevalent because of neo-Marxism infiltrating the universities first. This ideology did not come in through social media. It came in through the universities. So young people in the universities in the 90s and the early 2000s were already learning this stuff. And then when they were making their content, they posted what they learned in college.
That's bullshit. No, Joseph McCarthy came into the
universities first. You could see it entering the universities.
It's not neo-Marxism. It's liberalism. I wouldn't go as far as to say it's neo-Marxism.
Liberalism has a definition. This is not liberalism. This is neo-Marxism, which also has a definition. It is critical theory. It is classes. It is saying that there is one class above another class. This comes through with critical theory. So critical gender theory, women are below men, or trans people are below cis people. critical race theory, there are racial classes. That is neo-Marxism, and that is what exists in the universities now.
But my argument is that I don't think it's as, it may be prevalent and maybe in larger universities and by some teachers, but I don't even think they would have these beliefs if it wasn't expanded and provoked in the media. See, if they would
came
just,
before it if they, started before the internet, though,
if they would just stop talking about it, you would, it wouldn't be as prevalent. I guarantee that it wouldn't be as prevalent if they would just stop giving any thought to it. I guarantee that. I stand true to that. People, you know, whenever, like, let's say you repost something about some wacko teacher in New York City at some university, all you're doing is adding fire to that, gasoline to that flame. That's all you're doing. The more that we just dim the expansions of these thought practices, the more that I think they'd go away, because I think people use it as weapons against the other side.
Shining a light on these things, that's what is what's going to make them go away. So when you were in eighth grade, did you hear about in your school, did you learn about sexual ideology at all in eighth grade?
In eighth?
Yes.
In school?
Yes.
No, I didn't have a health class until high school.
Okay. So in Massachusetts, this was already happening. In eighth grade, we got a packet with a bunch of different gender identities and different sexual orientations, and we learned them. And then we had to do something called an inequality project. That was before all of this stuff going on in schools was in the media. This was already going on.
Okay, and do you think that first of all, I have a few questions about that. I'm not defending these people. Obviously, I think that their ideology is crazy. What I'm trying to get at is that, first of all, I think our federal government shouldn't have a say. I have a problem with, like, Christian nationalism and, you know, people trying to dictate off their own set of beliefs or to around the other people. I'm for freedom of expression, freedom of all of the original freedoms and rights that were outlined in the Constitution and the Declaration. I'm for all of that. My problem is, okay, so you had that happen in Massachusetts, okay? First of all, was this a public school or was it a school that was
It was a public school.
Okay. Was this one class that you had to do this in? Was it just the one teacher? Was it a part of the curriculum?
It was a part of the curriculum. The entire grade had to do this project. The entire grade had to learn these things. They took out our seminar time and had us do this.
And can you explain to me what the project was?
So the inequality project is you had to find an inequality in the world, and you had to write a 1,000-word paper on it, and you had to give a presentation on it. The idea being that kids are going to find these inequalities in the world so they fight them in the future. This is neo-Marxism. It is, there are disparities in the world that exist now, and you have to fight them because there is a class structure that already exists. This was already happening in the schools before people found out about it and started making a stink. This is why it was in Loudoun County, Virginia. This is why these books were in schools before people realized it, because this was growing under the surface before social media got a hold of it. And once social media got a hold of it, everyone's like, oh, this is new. This is just showing up. No, it's been in the schools for a long time. It was more prevalent in the liberal states like Massachusetts or California or New York. But it was making its way here. Like, kids, I'm sure kids in Kentucky during COVID were getting similar things, were having similar things happen to them that I had happen in Massachusetts in 2017.
See, I guess, you know, it's funny to me how you take that one assignment and you make it out to be, well, because I did this assignment, the people that will start believing in this practice and ideology, they're going to end up being radical communists. I don't see that.
Neo-Marxist doesn't have to be communist. It is finding class structures that exist and needing to tear them down. And you can see this with Israel-Palestine. A bunch of people are pro-Palestine for no reason. You could see this with George Floyd. People were going out and marching for Black Lives Matter when everything surrounding George Floyd was a lie. You could see this with gender ideology now.
Yeah, people like to support the minorities because I don't know if it makes them feel better or for. Yeah, I mean, and here's my thing. You know what my solution is? My solution to that is work hard, have a good paying job, and send your kid to a private school. That's, you know, if you don't want your kid to be indoctrinated, pay the money and send him to a private school.
Yeah, that doesn't change the culture, though. If most people are going to public schools and this is growing in the public schools, the culture is going to naturally turn into that. And then you sitting there with your nice house and your nice family going to a private school, one day you're going to look outside and there's going to be people with guns trying to take your money from you. That is the route that this is going to take. That is the route that this has taken throughout history every time something like this happens.
Well, I think we have measures in the United States that would prevent that. I think you're fear-mongering a little bit.
Systematic things only work if everyone agrees that they are real. If one group of people decides that cops aren't cops anymore, a cop shows up to arrest you, you're like, hey, what's that funny guy doing in a uniform? Anyway, I'm going to go on with my day. Power structures only work, especially liberal power structures like we have in America, only work if everyone agrees that they have power. If one group decides they don't, then they don't have power anymore. So if you sit back, let society do what society does and not try to combat it at all, and this grows, and they decide, hey, the Supreme Court isn't real, they have no power anymore, then any Supreme Court decision doesn't matter.
I agree with you that that was the foundation of our government. John Locke said, "Where tyranny, what was it? Where law ends, tyranny begins." That's a famous quote from John Locke. The founding principles of our nation were to create an independent country that valued liberty, virtue, self-preservation, all these things. That to believe that you have natural rights. And what's interesting, I'm going to sound so contradictory because of you and Evan last episode were talking about Christian nationalism and how in utopia we would have a outwardly Christian government. And I was like, well, you know, I don't like that idea. I prefer government to remain secular. And if it's a government by the people, for the people, then obviously religion would have some influence. But what's concerned me, and I don't know if it's, I think it's something that may have, it's been progressing over the past decade or so. People, and I've noticed it in our generation from just a handful of people that I've met, but it's now becoming a thing where I've started to pick up on it. People are, for one, they're becoming less religious. Number two, they are starting to have little to no self-worth. And number three, they're starting to not value the things that are important in life. They only value material things, or they only value, you know, the latest TikTok trend. But like if you ask them, well, do you want to get married and have kids? And they're like, no, I hate men. And it's kind of concerning that people, especially in our generation, are starting to not value their own life. They don't value just a good day's hard work. They don't value anything. Everybody wants to work from home now. Nobody wants to get after it. They just want to make a quick dollar. They want to make a lot of money, but they don't have to really work for it. They just want to be able to make a lot of money and DoorDash and you know, get fat. People just, they're not disciplined. They're not religious. And I'm not saying that our government should force people to go to church. I'm saying in this, people just need to realize, just, you know, how good things are. And we need societal change.
And that only comes from people standing up and saying, the society we're going down right now is wrong. The society that was created by the progressive movements of the 1900s were wrong. We need to turn it around and build a correct society. If you don't stand up and say that, society doesn't change.
And John, you know, I agree with you, but it's just, it's not so black and white. You know, you up here and say, well, one of the ways we're going to, you know, absolving all public education, privatize it. That may be a eventual change, but with the way our current system is now, it's not feasible just to deplete and get rid of all of our public education that we still need. People wouldn't get educated. People just wouldn't go to school at that point.
You know what it starts with? It starts with making children's cartoons. That is the first step towards changing societies, is making children's cartoons so your influence is the influence on the younger generation.
That's interesting.
Next would be to make like normal movies, write normal novels that promote family values so people our age want to have a family. Right now, that's not what's going on. None of the movies that were at the Oscars promoted family values.
You know, but what's so hard about what you're proposing is that, and I'm not trying to attack you because me and you have similar families and similar upbringings. It's easy for me and you to say that, you know, promote family values. It would be hard to convince someone whose mother's a drug addict and the father's not in their lives this type of thinking. And that's
why it starts as a kid. As a kid, you need to indoctrinate kids into the right ideology.
I mean, yeah, I'd like to see it. I'm open to anything. But do you not agree with what I said earlier about people are just losing their values, especially in our generation? They've started to lose.
Oh yeah, 100% agree with that. And I don't think there's any black and white solutions. It is, you need to start changing the society somewhere. And right now we are not. Only in the last year was the first time there was conservative cartoons that people actually liked.
You know, this is, we had all these things on our list to talk about. There's one final thing that I kind of want to talk about. One thing, some good news, audience, for all of you who may not have known, there was a historic rocket launch today, and I think John, he's been keeping up with it more than I have. He can explain it, but I thought it was really cool. It's good news. It's good for America. John, would you like to explain what happened today?
So SpaceX did their third integrated launch test for their super heavy rocket or Starship. Either one works. The booster is called Super Heavy. The rocket's called Starship. Together, they're called either one. This is the first time they got Starship past the Kármán line, which going past the Kármán line means you're going to space. The Starship will be the first fully reusable rocket once it's done. Now, people don't like Elon Musk, so in the news, you're going to see it was an utter failure. Everything blew up. But that is the way SpaceX works. They break things and learn from it.
Well, that's how engineering works.
Yeah.
You fail until you, and you try again until you fix it.
Well, the difference between SpaceX and other space agencies is other space agencies test every little bit of their rocket first, and then they launch. SpaceX builds a bunch of stuff, throws it into space, has it blow up, fixes whatever the problem was, shoot another one, blow it up. They keep doing that. So in the launch today, they proved a lot of things. They proved that they could do hot staging, which I think it's the first time hot staging has been done on that scale. Hot staging means that you're turning the engines on before you separate. They proved they could control the Super Heavy in the upper atmosphere with grid fins. They proved they could do a boost back with the Super Heavy booster. Sadly, the booster failed to do a landing burn, so it crashed into the ocean. They proved that they could open and close their door that they're going to use to release Starlink satellites. The first few Starships are going to be used to release Starlinks. They have a door that they call the PEZ door, because the way they're going to release satellites is going to be just like a PEZ dispenser. They're going to shoot one out at a time. They proved that they could transfer cryogenic fuels, which is fuels that are very...
Yeah.
This is my alternate politics.
Yeah, thank you, John. I think I developed them during that speech. Let's see.
We're going to have to cut those two words out.
Oh, yeah. Yep, they had, I don't know when that got banned, but but that was cool. We established that the biggest dork at Kentucky Westland, so congratulations. One of the things I was talking to an actual communist about, actually today, he's a intern for the state government, so hopefully that makes y'all feel good about yourself. In the future of our government. But we were talking about automation and how eventually AI is going to take over automation, and Americans are going to lose their jobs because corporations are going to they'd rather have automation because it's cheaper, AI automation, rather than employees. And I don't know. I just would like your stance on that. What do you think the future of AI and automation and manufacturing is going to be? Do you think all these people who work for these corporations are just going to be forced to learn how to fix the robots instead of, because I mean, companies like Toyota, and they utilize robotics in manufacturing anyway, but there's going to come a point where it's completely AI systems, and they're going to be able to fix themselves, and they're going to learn how to code, so they're going to be able to create new AI systems themselves. So I don't know. Because his approach was that we should go after Big Corp, and I don't agree with that. Okay.
So there's four ways to think about this AI takeover. The first one is the one that Andrew Yang pushed. It's inevitable, so we have to have a universal basic income, because at some point, no one's going to be working. It's going to be computers doing everything. Then you have the Tucker Carlson approach, which is, it's inevitable, computers are going to take over, so we need to regulate them and control them completely so they don't take over. Then you have the Elon Musk approach, which is, it's inevitable, computers are going to take over, so we have to get a chip in our head and become the computer. And then we have my thought on this is, that's not going to happen. There's no way that AI is going to take over all the jobs. You need to have people somewhere. And even when AI does take some jobs, other jobs will open up in spaces that they need. Like having a fully robotic McDonald's, it might be cheaper for a little bit. Eventually, it's going to break. And when it gets old, it's going to start breaking down more. And then maintenance is going to cost more than having the fully automatic McDonald's or just hiring a staff to run a McDonald's. With AI, eventually AI is going to, either it's going to cross the singularity or we're just going to stop advancing in it. Like right now we've been in a time of rapid industrialization and rapid development. Most of human history isn't like that. So chances are we're in the next stagnation for 1,000 years before something crazy happens.
Well, the rate in which technology has advanced every 100 years has exceeded the prior century. So we're only getting better at producing new technology. But
we could also just go into another dark age. That could happen.
I agree with you though. Like I'm not as worried about this. Obviously I'm not, I'm only, you know, 20 years old. I haven't lived long enough on this earth to, I've only grown up knowing the impacts of, you know, I didn't grow up with a cell phone. I played with toys, you know, growing up, but me and you are part of the generation that grew up alongside cell phones and,
the last kids, before pure iPad kids. The last generation played outside.
And what's funny is that now we're seeing like young kids, they don't hang out with each other anymore. Everything's just, it's all social. Everything's on just a social network. Nobody actually goes and does anything anymore, which I think it's, I like hanging out with people. I like being around just physical people, you know?
I mean, yeah. Like when I was a kid, I liked being outside. Even when we had a Wii and an iPad, I still went outside and threw rocks against each other because it was cool.
Yeah, like, and I had a PlayStation, but I'd still go and ride my bike and play in the dirt and play with, you know, shoot Nerf guns and BB guns. And, I had a great time. People just, you know, if I could leave any, you know, I'm only 20, but if I could leave the younger generation with any advice, it would be, really just get off the phone and just go outside, you know, go learn about people, go open a real physical book. I think social media has been the biggest detriment to our generation, the millennial generation. I think social media is terrible. I am against social media.
That is why we should ban TikTok.
TikTok is... Thank God.
Thank God we're banning TikTok. Let's go. Even though kids are saying they're going to kill themselves. That should show that TikTok needs to be banned when kids are like, if you ban TikTok, I'm going to kill myself. It's like, okay, you're worse than a crack addict at that point.
I mean, you have people in their 20s and 30s, and I'm talking about the people who are famous on TikTok. They're like, I have no other skills except dance and talking in a camera. And it's like... Don't you think that's kind of concerning?
Like, and a lot of them went to like college too, and they're like, I can only dance in front of a camera. It's like, okay, go get some skill. Like, go work at a McDonald's.
You TikTok freaks, go work in manufacturing at McDonald's so these AI systems don't replace you, because this is the utopia we're going to live in. Everybody's just going to be on TikTok, and then all of the work's going to be done by AI.
Now everyone's going to get their Neuralink, and they're going to sit in their pod and eat bugs all day. They're going to have a bug sludge going under their throat, and they're going to live in a fantasy world that they create. All the millennials are going to live in Harry Potter world. The kids are going to live in like a fucking Fortnite world.
There's going to be some like 16-year-old who was born in the year 2022 who's beating off in his cubicle to Shrek porn.
Kids are going to stop being born. They're just going to die out living in computers. They'll be like, we're all going to die out, and like the Amish are going to be like, what happened to everyone?
What if the Amish just take back over and they're like, we've been waiting for this?
Yeah, that's probably what's going to happen. They have population growth and we have population decline.
Maybe they knew instinctively, like, yeah, this technology isn't something to mess with.
Or even in the next 50 years, religion's going to take over again because religious people have kids.
I mean,
and
you're
even
right.
Like conservative liberals get abortions. They don't get married until they're 45.
A lot of them
sterilize the kids they do have, and conservatives don't do that. So conservatives are going to take over just by numbers at that point.
and you know, I'm probably gonna offend somebody. I've met people, liberals, who like they don't want kids. They're pro-abortion. They're anti-male being. They're anti-men being controller of the household, and it's like, and it's all about my mental health and my well-being. It's like you're kind of selfish because. I mean, it's fine if you don't, I guess, if you don't want kids, but like, I mean, we're edging closer and closer to a population crisis. And it's like, you know, eventually I wish there wasn't such a negative stereotype towards like people who have children. Yeah. You know, there's some people that they act like they're in a cult, but you know, most people are normal. That's what I leave this with. You know, the media depicts. The media depicts the craziness, and out in the real world, everybody's, for the most part, everybody's pretty normal. The normal people need to take over again.
Yep, too bad their kids are being educated by crazy people.
Make America normal again.
Yeah, that should be Trump's new campaign slogan. Or when I run, it'll be my campaign slogan.
Oh, you're not gonna, I'm trademarking that. When I run... Mana. I'm pretty sure that's like peace.
What are we gonna primary each other in 2040?
I hope so. I'll be like the what do you think our like values would be? Like if you could envision us in like 20 years.
If we go to the 2016 campaign, I will be the Rand Paul on the stage and you will be the Marco Rubio on the stage. Or the Jeb Bush. Probably the Jeb Bush.
Oh, you think you're Rand Paul?
I think my ideals align more with his than anyone else that was on the stage in 2016.
So, John, you know, as we wrap up, I like doing this with the podcast. Say one thing... that was positive about in the news this week, or just say something positive to leave the viewers with to take with them in the weekend.
Positives: we are banning TikTok, SpaceX is doing crazy cool things, and Trump is up in the polls.
That's beautiful, man. That's beautiful. I'm glad you're happy. I'm glad you're doing well.